Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Audio courtesy ESPN. In sadness and despair. No, I'm kidding. Hi.
Isn't it different to hear a coach with specifics about why they lost? He didn't just say, we got to coach it better.
Well, because he knows he's coaching a 64-win team from yesteryear, or yet last year.
A little more secure.
He's probably a little bit more secure in his answers. He's not just trying to move the press conference along. Yeah.
Oh, great Kenny, point. Kenny will sit there. If there were more beat writers there that made the trip, he'd sit there for 30 minutes.
He'll chop it up with anybody.
He'll start doing X's and O's. He'll actually show you. He'll actually show you, you know, here's this play, this little flare screen to Merrill. He'll do that stuff. Stefanski will not do any of that stuff right now.
The internet is not the place to look for some of the reactions to this because I don't know if it's real life. Is anybody upset in real life? Is anybody mad in real life? 216-474-0092. Are you mad in real life because of this? I'm dead serious. I want to know. I want to throw up the I'm opening up the lines. Everything's open. I want to know from everybody. Are you mad today? Are you upset over last night's loss? I don't think anybody should be thrilled, but are you upset over last night? Because the internet will tell you something completely different. Like, when the Browns lose, people are mad. When the Guardians lose in the postseason, people are mad in real life. And for a multitude of things. This is a 64-win team. I believed you were mad in real life last year in the postseason because it was the postseason. We were all mad in real life. I don't want to overreact to a game one. Because I'm going to tell you what my reaction is, and I think I'm going to, but I'm afraid I'm going to upset a lot of people when I tell everybody my reaction to it. You want to know it?
Go ahead.
I'm perfectly fine as long as Evan Mobley, as long as they continue to try to force Evan Mobley to be bigger, stronger, and more assertive. I'll take it a step further. I want more out of Kenny Atkinson and Donovan Mitchell where they just go, you know what? Willing to lose. I am perfectly fine with being a four seed. The wins in the regular season, yes, they matter. You want to have home court advantage. But I think it goes without saying, guys, that the veil is off. We've seen it all before. I don't think that number one overall really matters. You got teams that got guys who are injured. I don't think it matters. This drive for 65, ooh, that's a nice line. I didn't even realize that. This drive for more wins, it doesn't get me going. Evan Mobley being more aggressive, taking more shots, get me going. You know what doesn't get me going? Donovan Mitchell being forced to play hero ball to try to win game one. That's what doesn't get me going. Because I'm just like, I've seen that movie before. That movie loses in the second round again.
So why do you think it pivoted? And when do you think it pivoted yesterday? Because clearly they came out and the whole goal of everybody associated with the Cavs. And did you see... You had Kobe Altman sitting courtside in New York and right next to Nick. Nick, we're going to have in studio, right? Friday? Barlage with the Cavs?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, sorry.
They were sitting. Very rare you see a GM courtside.
Is that Nick Nolte?
Like that.
I didn't know because it's New York. I didn't know who he was sitting next to.
But they were hanging out next to Kevin Bacon. They were hanging out next to Ben Stiller, Chris Rock.
Kevin Bacon was there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was there.
We text Nick and see if he'll ask those guys to come in too.
We should
That'd be great if you could get Kevin Bacon in
here.
I imagine they were all hanging out in whatever club.
If we had Kevin Bacon in here, I would do nothing but Footloose questions, and it would annoy Lima. I want to do that one time. We get an actor in here, and I just ask him about an old movie that people might like, and just never move the conversation along and make Lima mad.
I'll ask him how he got in the spirit to do Sleepers. It was the feel-good movie of 1995. Anyway, so I was wondering, and this is why I asked you the question. It went from, all right, it's Evan's game. Coming out party, Evan. Legler, Richard Jefferson.
Yeah.
All about Evan. And then that was a nice quarter, and that was the end of Evan for the night. What do you think was the reason?
I don't need, and I need them to be in the beginning of the season. Like, yeah, you know, there's going to have to be a time you hit the gas and you get wins underneath you. But, man, you got to be comfortable with teaching lessons. And they never, like, Donovan has said it before. And I'm serious. I know it's week one. It's game one. Donovan has said it before. I never believe him. And that's a good thing, I guess. He's got too much dog in him. He's too much a competitor. He's not going to let everybody else just lie around.
Well, it's also MSG.
And it is the garden.
It does matter.
Yeah, you're right about that.
It does matter when Ben Stiller is sitting courtside.
You got to be willing to go, you know what? This ain't going to make us better. Me trying to take over this game, calling the offense through Donovan, ain't going to make you better. Ain't going to happen. So, again, we've done it the last 2 years, and it hasn't worked the last 2 years. How am I expecting it to work in year three? So, if they can go out, I'm serious. Like, he said it the other day after shoot around, Kenny did, where he's like, you know, you win 15 in a row, fine. And like, he kind of sounded like he was over regular season wins. Hey, you win 15 in a row, that's great. If we start off 12-3, he started putting on all the scenarios. We start off 12-3, or we start off, you know, 10-5, or 5-10. It doesn't matter as long as we're taking that step. I go, okay, then take that step. Take that step. Because we all know, guys, like, you're either going to sink or swim with number four. That's what's going to happen. Like, you can run Donovan into the ground, and we'll continue to have this fight in May. You can do that, or we can try to go for the gusto, and even, guys, even if it doesn't work, like, I'll say eventually at some point, like, hey, he's just going to be meek. It ain't going to happen. We just got to go through Donovan, and I'm not going to take them as a serious title contender then. Maybe you just have to do that, and that's it, but at least I'll know the truth. So, just be willing to let them lose. I'm serious. Let Donovan, please. We have to teach lessons here if you're Donovan, if you're Kenny. Because you can go out. Like, the Knicks are still a tough team. And I know they had three guys out yesterday. The Knicks are still a tough team. And you didn't have DeAndre Hunter. That hurts. Okay? Both teams were banged up. I think it's probably an Eastern Conference Finals preview. Fair?
Yeah, okay. Just it depends on the seeding.
You'll be able to run down and beat a lot of teams in the East. But just, you got to be willing to teach them the lesson. Donovan has paid the price so many times over. I have complete trust and faith in Donovan. And now I have to put that trust and faith in him going, hey, you got to know better than these guys. You got to go out there and force the issue with some of these guys.
What'd you think of Evan overall, though?
Again, I was encouraged in the first half, just like you said. In the second half, I just wanted to see more. I just like, no, don't go away from this.
You know,
don't go away from this. If you go down by 20, if you lose by 20, you lose by 20. And then we can say, this is what you need to do to step up to this level. You got to get going, son. You got to get going. It's year five. I'm sick and tired of waiting around. I got mad at you last year when you brought up the Wembanyama thing. Because it's like, well, he's not the same type of prospect as Wembanyama. I think we can all agree on that. But, I mean, you brought up how he's still
40 last night, by the way.
40 and 15, yeah. By the way. Like, that was... Yeah, that was NBA Jam type of stuff right there. I'll ask you about Cooper Flagg later. You can try to prop him up as much as you want, and I try to do as well because it's what's going to get us over. I'm willing to accept by March, April, if he ain't there, he ain't there. And if he ain't there by year five, he ain't ever going to be. So, but if he's going to be bigger and stronger and play tougher, and they're going to force the offense through him, that's going to give you the best shot. I've made such a big deal of it during this offseason. That's where I'm at Sorry, go ahead.
So much of our Evan conversation has always revolved around something that's pretty silly how we've talked about it, and I've been guilty of it, which is, did he shoot threes? Well, yeah, last night he shot 8 threes.
Yes, he did.
And the Knicks were okay with that. You notice, it's not like the Knicks all of a sudden defended him like Steph, where they're running guys at him, and that opens up things for everybody else. The three ball for Evan, while it's important for him, it also seems to be a concession. Like, teams are not coming out and guarding him. Now, maybe if he continues going 4 of 8 from three every game, where it's him wide open, taking his time, getting it off, you know, from the wing, then maybe eventually teams will shift. But I feel like the Knicks last night are like, all right, as long as you're 30 feet from the basket, 25 to 30 feet from the basket, less bad things will happen to us. We're not going to get in foul trouble. You know, you're not going to open up things when Darius comes back for Darius getting open looks. Like, fine, fine. Have the threes. And so I do wonder about that, you know, from a strategy perspective for the Cavs. It's what we've all said. Shoot the threes, make the threes, shoot the threes, make the threes. He did that last night. And yet the Knicks never changed the way they defended him. And so it's almost like, well, if he's going to go 4 of 8 from three, should he shoot 5 more? Should he shoot 6 more? Like, at what point do we want Evan saying, all right, forget that. I'm putting my head down and I'm getting all the way to the basket. Because he almost never got to the basket last night. It was all being turned off, shut down by like Ananobi or Bridges, and then he has to turn, and then it's, you know, it's still a good shot. Like, it's an 8-footer. But I think the Knicks are okay with him taking threes and twisting, turning 8 to 10 footers.
Wasn't he working with LeBron or something like that during the offseason? Or who was Evan Mobley working with during the offseason? I know I saw clips of him working with some legends or something.
Should
like
have
that
been Akeem. Wemby was working with Olajuwon.
You can go through this during the offseason all you want. These are old things. These are habits that die hard.
Because Evan doesn't have a lot of post moves.
No.
He just kind of turns over his shoulder and shoots. And it's a quality shot for him because he's going to be able to get that off. Very few guys are going to be able to have a defense for him. But again, those are only worth two, and he's not drawing fouls, and he's not getting all the way to the basket.
So he's going to have to continue to be as aggressive as possible, and we're going to have to deal with this during the regular season. But I cannot say it enough. We have to have, when it comes to the power of this organization, I mean, Darius can talk tough, and we got audio of him in that interview with Lisa Salters on the bench. We were talking about that. Looked like, you're right, he would look like he wanted to be anywhere but sitting right there and having a conversation at that moment. We'll get to Jared Allen coming up here in about 7 minutes, I'd say, and that, because I think you guys have already found your target for the year. And when they play that audio that they played from ESPN, I can't say I blame you, because that's a bad, bad memory, and it's coming from the same guy. And I understand he might have been joking, but still, we'll have that audio coming up here at around 6:25, okay? But the power of this team lies in Donovan Mitchell's hands and Kenny Atkinson's hands. And they need a damned concerted effort to be willing to just, you know what? Even if it says Donovan's going to sit here, he's going to sit in the fourth. You guys got to go out there and you guys got to prove it. I got 100% trust in Donovan. He is as tough as they get. He's a great basketball player. He was the perfect guy to trade for at the perfect time. I will give credit to where it's due for Kobe Altman. He is as dog as it gets, but he ain't teaching anybody any lessons that they're going to need in the postseason by trying to take over these games. And it's hard for me to say that to him, because it's like, well, you need guys who are refusing to go quietly. You need guys to have toughness. Like, we bring up the Browns, and how often do we talk about the culture? Culture this and culture that. I scream about culture just about after every loss and how they don't have that guy. Like, Donovan's that guy. Donovan is the guy in the Cavs locker room like, hey, no, we're not doing this. You're not going to be that way. I'm going to carry this. And damn it, if you're not going to come with me, there's going to be problems. That's the type of guy I love. That's the type of guy Cleveland fans love. But it's not doing us any good if he's got to come in the fourth quarter and go, okay, I'll bail you out again. Here we go. And you know what? It's easy to say that after you lose. I'll say that after wins. There will be wins that they will have if they keep that up. There will be wins that they have that I'll have to come in here and be bad guy, because it's not going to get you any further in the postseason. The road is open. It's wide open right now. You got major injuries on other teams. They're going to hamper these teams moving forward for this year. You have a wide open lane to learn, to teach, and to have that experience. So today, hey, it's one game. I want Evan Mobley to have a full full game, a full 48 minutes of aggression, that's the only way this team's going to get better. You're halfway there. You're halfway there with the kid. You'll have another opportunity coming up, and then you'll have another opportunity to home on Sunday. 216-474-0092. Are you okay with losing early if it means that Mobley is strong? Because there will be games, I hope, that he will be strong all throughout four quarters and you lose by three and I'll come in here and go, hey, fine, I don't care. Tell you right now.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The breaking news story today, Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier arrested in gaming cases, gambling cases, legal gambling sources, told ESPN late last night as they broke the story first, and now we have official confirmation from the FBI. Excuse me. Rozier was arrested this morning in Orlando, and then Billups was arrested in Oregon. Also, former Cavaliers player and assistant coach Damon Jones was arrested on Thursday provided inside information about NBA games to co-defendants who used it to play sports bets. And you know, Jeff and I were talking about in the beginning, it's just like, how easy is it for a player to maybe just say, hey, I'm not playing tonight. Next thing you know, somebody finds out you're not playing. And then all of a sudden, you know, over-unders or the way people bet on games gets skewed. And, you know, now that, you know, we have major corporations that are doing this in conjunction with the leagues, it's real easy to kind of see the trends that happen out there. And we all know this from baseball from over the summer too, that, you know, all of a sudden you see, you know, a pitch that maybe should have, you know, just been a regular pitch. Maybe whoever was doing it did something to make it become a ball or a strike. And all of a sudden you got a prop. I got a feeling that the prop bets, when this is all said and done, they're going to have to figure out a way to curtail prop bets. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the gaming organizations that are in conjunction with the leagues start dropping prop bets. It seems to me that would be the safest way to do things, wouldn't it?
Got me, pal. You got me, pal. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Hmm. I mean, the prop bets are a great way to legally do this stuff, but they're so, you would think, easily manipulated.
Yeah. It just seems too easy. It's not as, yeah. They're going to win, they're going to lose? Okay, I think we can all kind of...
Yeah, that's what gambling on sports used to be.
Yeah.
And where gambling bad things popped up. You know, hey, we threw the game. Well, now you can throw a pitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I don't know how else to look at this. Anything else, Dan, in the break or anything that's happened?
Nothing... I mean, just more details that's going through this whole thing. March 23rd, Terry Rozier, while playing for the Hornets, let others close to him know that he planned to leave early with an injury. Associates bet more than $200,000 on Rozier's unders, and winnings were delivered to Rozier's home, the indictment alleges. That's kind of the big part of this. They're referring to it as an insider trading saga of the NBA. That is the FBI and the Department of Justice is saying such things. So we'll keep you up to date on anything else.
Doesn't sound coincidental there, does it, Andy?
No. Did you say that the winnings were delivered somewhere? Is that what you said in that last statement?
Yeah, that was according to the indictment.
In the indictment, it's saying that the winnings were sent to Rozier's place of
abode.
Winnings residence. Were delivered to Rozier's home, according to the indictment.
That doesn't sound coincidental.
No, that's not good.
No, that's not good.
Especially for, you know, Northeast Ohio guy. He's oh, man.
Well, for an any guy.
Yeah, I know. All right, so.
The thing that we people who live in the real world, it's hard to fathom is, you make how much money playing ball?
Yeah.
And you got to try and make a little more, huh? Mm-mm. Okay, good luck.
All right, I'll take one more phone call. If there any more news breaks about this moving forward up, but you know, as we head towards the top of the hour, we have Nick Costos coming in at 11 o'clock here. We'll talk to him.
Yeah,
too.
We'll talk a little legalized gambling with Nick.
Yeah, and I'm interested to hear what his take is on all this today, too. The mayor's in Brooklyn. Hey, Mayor.
Hey, I want to talk about the Cavs, if that's okay.
I can. By all means.
Hi, Jeff. Hey, first of all, I think one thing we saw last night is Jalen Tyson may not be a PTP-er right now, okay?
Keywords were right now. I agree with you.
Okay, he is not ready to be a starter in this league. They need somebody else in the starting lineup, okay?
Just please, one game, Kenny. Though, Ken. Just one game.
Jeff, I totally get it, but, you know, I thought the rest of the guys played pretty well. I think that they were complaining this morning about J.A., J.A. needs the ball more. And, you know, he's developed a little bit of a jump shot and a spin move to the basket and stuff. So, you know, don't blame him that nobody got him the ball. And we had this come up last year, Jeff. And
I couldn't agree with you more about this one.
I mean, you got almost a 7-foot guy down there. You got to use him a little bit more.
And agreed, Ken. Agreed.
I just think, you know, Kenny, last time I said things are a little clunky. Yeah, well, when you got three guys out, and by the way, I think Darius Garland said last night that he's a lot closer than Thanksgiving that somebody reported the other day, okay? The way it sounds to me.
So, you know, one thing I didn't like last night, Ken, and this is just being really nitpicky about one game, and Donovan Mitchell was great in the second half. Evan Mobley, after a great first half, took only five shots in the second half. Five shots.
Yeah, he disappeared. Yep. And he and J.A. need to demand the ball.
Yep.
The guards have got to take a step back. I mean, if somebody's on one night, that's fine, okay? But you got two big guys. And the other thing, too, Jeff, as I didn't understand, is we didn't see any Thomas Bryant last night either.
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think Dean Wade played well. Junior played well. Lonzo played decent. There's some, you know, and obviously Merrill played well. Okay, and I just liked especially the way Dean Wade played. You know, the last couple of years Dean's had trouble. He's going to the basket more. He's more active on the court. He's I think his shot's finally coming back. He shot the ball pretty well last night. I just like that kid. And I mean, they'll get it figured out. You know, not having DeAndre Hunter, I think, really was the key last night. Because we having DG out and Strus out, we understand that. But not having DeAndre Hunter, I thought, made a big difference as well.
I agree with you, Ken. I like DeAndre Hunter, and I like his fit with the rest of this team.
I do too. You can tell they missed him last night.
He's a really nice young player, and Jalen Tyson is a guy that, you know, he's second year. Give him Ken's right. He didn't look really good last night. Give him some time. Two things about Lonzo Ball last night. Hated the fact that all he took were threes, and he was 1 of 7 on threes. He didn't take any other shots. Loved the fact that he had 6 assists. And that's going to be something to watch. I think Lonzo is...
He threw that one rocket into the corner, that one pass.
Yeah, that one sailing. I like Lonzo. I like what he couldn't add to this team because they don't have anything else like him.
No, they really don't.
He's a unique player for this team, and I hope he can stay healthy, and I hope that he continues to mesh with everybody else. Because I honestly, Andy, he's the type of guy that I think they can really use in the backcourt, and I think it was a really nice move to pick him up if he's healthy.
Yeah, let's get back to the Cavaliers in a second. I just... Dan, there's some more stuff coming in. The press conference is over now, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Director Patel and the FBI have left the podium right now. We've got a couple of cuts. This is directly from the Department of Justice and the FBI, Director of FBI, Kash Patel.
Individuals such as Chauncey Billups, Damon Jones, and Terry Rozier were taken into custody today. Former, current NBA players and coaches. This is an illegal gambling operation and sports rigging operation that spanned the course of years.
Okay.
Bad.
So far, not good.
Bad.
Well, yeah. It's not going to get a whole lot better.
The FBI led a coordinated takedown across 11 states to arrest over 30 individuals today responsible for this case, which is very much ongoing. Not only did we crack into the fraud that these perpetrators committed on the grand stage of the NBA, but we also entered and executed a system of justice against La Casa Nostra to include the Bonanno, Gambino, Genovese, and Lucchese crime families.
Okay.
Oh boy.
It's starting to sound like a movie script, doesn't it?
Oh boy.
Oh boy is right. You want one more? You want to keep going here?
I'm in. You could read off the charges for you. That'll make you feel comfortable.
The charges and the arrests that were taken down across this country range from wire fraud, money laundering, extortion, robbery, illegal gambling.
Yep, it's still not getting any better.
Well,
and the NBA has nothing to say. I'm looking at their website right now. Zero.
Yeah.
Zero from
probably
the NBA.
Probably better off.
Well, they're going to have to say something.
You've
got to believe the commissioner is going to come out today and say something. Oh, he's got to, I mean.
You know that they've got lawyers upon lawyers upon litigators upon every. I mean, they're going to make sure that this statement is crafted perfectly and every word picked, hand-picked.
You're saying the NBA, not the FBI.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. FBI leading on with, well, the amount of money that was found in this.
The fraud is mind-boggling. It's not hundreds of dollars. It's not thousands of dollars. It's not tens of thousands of dollars. It's not even millions of dollars. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars in fraud and theft and robbery across a multi-year investigation.
Oh, boy, this is not good for the NBA. I want to hear what the NBA has to say at some point here today, so we're going to get to that if that comes up. Nick
Billable hours, baby!
Yeah.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick and JP back on Afternoon Drive. We've got Pete Futek coming up at 4:20 today. We got the quarterback Deadpool coming up in 40 minutes. Mac has been making hay in the quarterback Deadpool. The rest of us, we're just getting by.
We got a college football savant among us.
We do. Who knew? The guy who couldn't find a third quarterback in the draft. He's gone from hacksaw in the quarterback Deadpool to not being hacksaw. And we appreciate him on that one. But the Cavs are back and they lost. So why do they suck? I mean, that's the conversation we got
to
have.
Yeah, let's have all the answers after one game. Let's try to figure it out. It was obviously not a pretty game. I don't know that I care as much as some other people that Donovan Mitchell, scored a 21-point third quarter and decided to get them back in the game and look at that as a bad thing. To me, that was like, okay, you did what you had. You put the cape on. You put him back in a position. You erased the big deficit and had him leading. And then you got it down to the fourth, and it was what it was.
I just think the funniest thing about, to me, it looked like the quintessential feel-out game. Two teams that didn't look all that ready for the regular season. I know New York made more shots, but It looked like how I think when you have four preseason games and the Cavs hadn't played in over a week's time, that's how that first game should look, right? We're subsiding on good feels and basketballs back, not
pounding the pavement and pounding the hard court and saying, how is this happening? Why is this happening? Like, the two most interesting things from last night tangentially happened on the court. They did not happen during actual play. The first one was after the game, Donovan Mitchell dapping every single New York Knick up.
Except for Hart.
Except for Josh Hart.
Yeah.
Which is only going to aid the idea that people think the two of them hate each other, which is funny because I thought they were teammates in Utah, but I don't know if they actually linked up.
He was also teammates with Rudy Gobert in Utah, and we know they hated each other. So
the old microphone toucher.
If anything, being teammates with Donovan, unless you're Joe Ingles. For some reason, that Utah team, it just didn't work for him with making a lot of friends.
Could it be that it was in Utah?
Well, I think Rudy Gobert is just he just kind of stinks.
Yeah. That's fair. I think Utah's beautiful, by the way, but I get it if you're an NBA player and you don't feel comfortable there.
Have you been to Utah?
Josh Hart never played in Utah.
What did you say?
Josh Hart never played in Utah.
Well, neither did you.
Not with that attitude,
Are you sure he didn't play in Utah?
I'm looking at his senior basketball research. Reference page.
He played in New Orleans. He played in Portland. He played in L.A.
His basketball reference page right now.
I wanted to let everyone know I do know Josh Hart has played in certain NBA cities.
Have you been to Utah?
Yes, kind of. So I have not been to Salt Lake City.
Okay,
but I gotta tell you, I've seen pictures of it, and I'd really like to go.
I went when Wichita State, when they were in the opening round of the March Madness tournament. I went, and that was quite a boring city.
So I've been to Tahoe, and I've been to one of the other.
But I'm not a skier though. I'm not a skier. Like if I love skiing or something like that, then I'm sure I would have had a great time in Salt Lake City.
I just think it looks beautiful. I just think that, and you don't have like the earthquake concern that other mountainous areas have.
Yeah, that's always a problem.
That's some pretty strong Utah analysis there. I'm going to bail out of that.
The Josh Hart situation, that was the one, and I'm assuming the other one you're going to highlight here is Jared Allen and what he said before the game.
Yes, and we're going to play Jared Allen's comments as heard. The attempt at a joke here by ESPN.
Is it just me, or the lights in here brighter than expected?
So that harkens back to 3 years ago getting bounced out of the series by the Knicks and Jared Allen saying, I guess the lights were brighter than we expected. In fairness, he has come to say he kind of said that tongue in cheek when he said that originally, but it doesn't matter. People were pissed that he said this yesterday.
People were pissed. I understand why people were pissed. I think the problem that me and you are going to have in this discussion, I don't want to speak for you, I don't know where you stand on it, is more the idea that we have an appreciation for comedy that we can't let go of in this situation.
Yeah, it's a funny bit.
It's a funny bit.
It's a really funny
bit. I get why it made people mad. I understand why it made people mad. But for me,
not last night, I don't understand.
Well, but for me, it was more about him trying to continue the idea that, first off, they're putting those demons in the closet and they're tucking them away and they can laugh at the problems that they used to have because they're not worried about those problems anymore. He's not concerned about whether the lights are too bright. He's been in bigger moments. He's gotten over that. And if anything, when you can joke about something like that, that's kind of shown that you have.
So I look at it and go, like 3 years ago, I got why you were upset. That made a lot of sense. It really does. I mean, him saying that, even tongue-in-cheek, 3 years ago, because of the way that postseason loss to the Knicks stung, you were the favorites, you were the better team, and you lost in five games. Get it. Now, I mean, the guy had a bad game last night. There's 4 points, 4 rebounds? Yep, he did not have his best game.
Which every now and then Jared has one of those games.
We don't need to do the march on Washington for Jared Allen if he has a bad game. It's not Jared Allen's fault. He's not a superstar level player. The same level as like a Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, or Darius Garland. He's a really damn good basketball player. He had a bad night. And he hearkened back to a joke that he made 3 years ago. I mean, some of the takes I heard on Jared Allen today, as if he can't make that joke, it's like the guy is part of your resurgence, and he's an incredibly valuable basketball player.
And on most nights, he's a walking double-double.
Yes, and by the way, has been an all-star, could be an all-star again in a weekend East this year. Like, I it's weird when we kind of develop these, and I get it, right? I do, because they're like Miles. Like Miles will say something like he did last Friday, and I'll be like, dude, you don't get to say that. So everybody has their soft spot with individual players. Mm-hmm. I don't get why it's Jared Allen. Jared Allen's not the reason you've been bounced out of the playoffs prematurely the last 3 years, because he's more of a role-playing starter than he is a superstar. The failure's on your superstar players.
Yeah, no question. All right, so what did you make inside the game where Mobley starts off incredibly hot? Mobley's aggressive. Mobley's taking three-pointers. And then it felt like Mobley did what we've seen Mobley do before. And we saw him do it, honestly, in the second round of the postseason last year, where he'd have these really nice halves. And this is just the first quarter. And then the second half just be a completely different player.
Is this a cop out if I say that's like 99% of the NBA? I don't watch most NBA players dominate from the first minute to the 48th minute. That's not really how the game goes. It is a game of runs, and certainly superstar players, oh, you got your 12 points here. You got your 12 points here. Like Donovan.
Yeah, that's the sad part about the NBA. Most players are just trying to get to their number, and then they just kind of stop.
Well, but I don't even think it's like.
But I don't think that was it.
I don't think it's like a cynical thing. I just think, okay, they had a response to him being, dominating, and I don't think the offense is going to be incredibly functional or interesting if it's just Evan commanding the offense for four quarters. I think it's about when he commands. Now, that's the interesting thing. Like, okay, Evan, you were dominant early, and then. You really weren't in the second half. Where was that? That's a fair conversation. But to the big thing of like, are we going to be tracking when his big runs come all season long? Because that sounds exhausting to me.
No, I think what was startling for fans, or what was at least exciting for fans, is, I mean, he shot 8 three-pointers in that game. And you're like, whoa, that's like you want it. Like if Evan Mobley is going to be better than Donovan by the time we get to the playoffs and make that ascension into being the best player on this team, how it's going to happen is from, I mean, maybe not 8 three-pointers every night, but elevating that 3-point shot and taking the chances on the outside. And so to see that growth early on, like I was very encouraged by that. I thought that was a very good sign.
I do think it is, but I think it's something that's going to be a work in progress. And I like, listen, we're going to need to see a couple games where he does that late in the game. And I really actually did understand Ken's point this morning that Donovan taking over the way he does is not always the best possible scenario, because you're your best when any one of your three best players can do that. That's not about Donovan laying out, though. That's about Evan saying, it's my run, I'm feeling it, I need to take over because we've got the matchup that I'm going to be the best version of that. So I don't think that's a Donovan thing. Like Donovan, like if you want Evan to take over in that same moment that Donovan did last night, it's on Evan to throw up the stop sign. And that's a relationship between two players. And I, by the way, I happen to think that if Evan told Donovan that last night, I think Donovan would have gone away, because he's done it for Darius too at different points.
Well, so I think the problem that I think Cavs fans had within that is that they're living with what happened in the second round of the postseason last year, and they're living within game 3 and game 4, where you watch this exact scenario play out in many ways, where you want to say it's Evan putting up the stop sign, call it whatever you want, but it felt like Donovan needed to put the world on his shoulders and then took it upon himself to do so. I just don't think a Donovan Mitchell takeover game is ever a bad thing. I just don't look at it that way.
I think that's like, listen, over 82 games, I'm going to need Evan to take 5 to 10 games over like that. I'm going to need Donovan to take, and I'm just throwing out a random number. I'm just trying to like give you the sample size. Donovan's still probably going to take over more than Evan, mm-hmm. and probably going to take more over than Darius. That's okay. Donovan's more used to that. So as much, though, as there are going to be times where Donovan has to fall back, that's on Evan to make it happen. And the only thing that Donovan, Darius, and Kenny Atkinson can do in that scenario is encourage Evan. But ultimately, if he's not feeling it, or if he's got a side character syndrome, well, that's kind of on the kid. That's not a criticism. That's just the reality of it. I thought the Donovan, I understand the point, but I thought the Donovan criticism was way off base, because I was like,
no, I did too.
No, well, somebody's got to do it.
Exactly.
Donovan can't look at Evan and go, you like point at him, like you can't initiate that for somebody else,
especially not when you're down 17 like the Cavs were at one point in that game. I mean, that was a obviously they clawed back into it, and because of Donovan you ended up having the lead near the end of the third, but that was for many stretches of that game, that was the Knicks dominating.
I watch the reaction to the game. And I think some of it is, I think actually it's a really good thing because I think people are just excited that basketball's back. Yeah, I like that people cared about
it. I got worried that a game like that would happen and people would just sweep it under the rug and not really do anything with it anyway. Like, I was almost encouraged at the outrage that I saw because it tells me that we're going to have a lot of really cool conversations throughout the regular season.
Yeah, that same thing.
People took it too far, though. Hold on. Some people took it too far.
Okay.
Like, when I looked in the Odyssey chaptering today for Baskin and Phelps, and I clicked in the segment and I didn't get to the part where they actually talked about it because they were talking about phone lines being down or some nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But the headline on the title was, should the Cavs trade Darius Garland this offseason? Now that I think might be a little bit of a different reaction than what I want to go for after game one. That one might be a little bit too, let's not do that after every single game, maybe.
All right, so maybe this is the way, if you had played Chicago last night and you had just blown the doors off and beat them by 30 points, and then tonight you played that same game against the Knicks and lost, I guarantee you the reaction tomorrow would not be what it's been today to last night's Knicks game. And I think that's where I found myself chuckling a little bit of like, yeah, that's why you got to trade Jared. I'm like, easy, damn, does it.
They traded Darius. They were ready to go. But you only get so many of these games against what's supposed to be the creme de la creme, the cream of the crop in the East. And that's kind of what I think a lot of people put a lot of weight into this because it's the Knicks and they're the team that is perceived to be the one that could kind of snipe off the East and really ruin a lot of the Cavs' expectations. But it's game one, guys.
Was Jared Allen's joke about the lights being brighter than expected last night, was that a bad look by Jared Allen? And if so, what's going on with you, man? Talk to me. All right? We're here to help. Trust Tree with a Nest. It's okay. This is a safe place. And the Patriots' unseen advantage on Sunday, it's right under your nose. It was right under their nose. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Lima, you called me a psychopath, but you said before that's the way to do it. So I don't like to eat in studio. Sometimes I do. Obviously. I don't like to, but I don't like to do it.
You don't even like getting caught drinking your milk or whatever that was.
No, I had a milk earlier a couple days ago, and I held up my thing every time I went to take a swig of it. People thought I was vaping. I don't know why, but either way, because I didn't want the camera to catch me. And I don't like people seeing me eat, but either way, that's just one of my little things. So I have this muffin, because you do know the muffin man. And I have a muffin, and it's the convenience store downstairs sells very large muffins. And this muffin is a chocolate muffin, and I did it with a blueberry muffin earlier this week, as I've had now two muffins this week. Boy, I'm going to be regular later.
These are the biggest muffins you will see.
They're very large muffins.
Genetically engineered.
And one time, years ago, I had one of these chocolate muffins, and I remember I got so frustrated, because it was actually during a Daryl interview. I'm like, what the F? And I had like chocolate muffin, chocolate chip sauce, whatever, all over my fingers. It fell over. I put it somewhere. I'm like, I got it on my pants. It was terrible. And I hate mess. I am I try to be a very clean person. And I decided, you know what? No. So now I keep it in its cup thing in the wrap, and I eat it with a spoon. And I took a picture of it, put it on social media, because Lima goes, oh, we got to discuss this. This is crazy.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody do that.
And you said it could be the move, though.
But I said, I've had those muffins. I've had it all over me. There's no way, like those Kind bars I eat,
yeah,
there's no way not to get the particulate all over
exactly
you when you're eating that stuff. So Ken did that, and I'm like, that's kind of smart. And then,
thank you.
Oh, you mentioned
it's
a
like a loaf of bread.
No, Mitch mentioned a fork. I said that he's a psychopath for using a spoon. What do you eat cake with? Do you use a spoon with cake as well?
No, I use a fork with cake.
Okay.
But it's on a plate. There's no plate here. I only have a napkin, and I want to keep it all in. I don't want to be picking up little pieces of muffin later on the table.
If you can't do the crime, don't do the time.
It's not a crime. I'm just having a muffin in the morning. That's what I'm doing.
No, I'm just saying, if it's such a big thing for you that the particulate could get everywhere.
Yeah.
Just don't do it. Do something else.
This is
a banana. That doesn't get everywhere.
No, I'm not eating a banana because
he's something else.
He's turned me off to bananas because he eats the strings. It's disgusting.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
What do you mean sometimes? You eat the strings every time.
No, but now because you mentioned it, I started throwing them to the side. I don't want to deal with it.
See,
that's why we have that wall full of strings over here.
It's all the string wall. It's one. And we tell all our guests to come in and pay
homage. Sign the string wall. Anyway, bring your own string.
I don't particularly like to eat with my hands, except for certain foods you have to. Like if I'm having a sandwich, fine.
It is a messy endeavor, though, Owen. Yeah. You got to admit, like you are, first of all, there is nothing more gross. And Kenny's called me out on this too. Yeah. Than licking your thumbs and your fingers.
Do you use a fork with chicken wings? When you get wings?
No, I eat wings as they're meant to be eaten.
Okay.
But like if I eat like a 4-piece white with JoJo's, okay. I'm using a fork. I like that. Like if I go to Mr. Chicken, I get the 4-piece dinner with the two breasts, two wings. They usually give you the mashed potatoes.
I only get the dark meat, so I don't know.
If I were just into thighs and drums, I would eat that with a fork too.
Thighs, buddy.
Thick thighs save lives and make good chicken dinners. Yes. Fine. All right. Real quick.
It's tongs.
We're getting back to Browns coming up here in a second, I promise. However, I made our boss mad, and I kind of want to ask people, did you guys want me to make a big deal yesterday about Jared Allen? Like, we talked about Jared Allen, and I said, yeah, it sounds bad. And I mean, good God, we had people lined up wanting to trade the guy. Mm-hmm. But he acted disappointed. Do we have audio here? Here's Jared Allen before the Knicks game the other night, and this is what he had to say.
Is it just me, or the lights in here brighter than expected?
Audio courtesy of the Entertainment Sports Programming Network.
So it was a throwaway line, yeah. And we agreed that had he have had a great game,
it would have been a great
one.
Yeah.
We'd be laughing about how whimsical Jared Allen is. He has a bunch of lines like he's always interesting. Anytime he gets interviewed, says some funny things.
He says he's texting Joey like, oh, get ready. I think Ken's going to lose his mind. I'm like, it's game one. I'm not going to lose my mind. I'll have plenty of time later in the season to lose my mind. I'm going to really have a rant and get red faced and vulgar over game one of the season, not a series of a season. It is against the Knicks. And I know that we're supposed to match up against them in the Eastern Conference Finals. I get that. But I'm like, man, am I really going to do that game? What do you guys, would you guys know? Do you want me to do it? Did I miss an opportunity to get mad at Jared Allen?
No, I think
when
you do
your
fake outrage, is some of the worst that you do.
But I'm not.
If you're not outraged,
I've never done fake outrage, and I'm not going to fake it.
Yeah, what are you insinuating there, Owen?
I definitely agree with you.
What have I ever been fake outrage? Name five examples.
Owen, could you power rank the instances of fake outrage from Ken Carman?
Do it right now.
We'll move on. I just want to get into our Surfside Cavs update brought to you by Surfside.
The Surfside fake outrage brought to you by Surfside. Yeah, he's like, I texted Joey. I go, well, first off, I'm not doing these things. I don't get mad at the Browns and like go after Kevin Stefanski, who I find to be a friend. I don't go after those guys just for your YouTube clips. I'm not trying to just do a clip show for you. I'm trying to do a show for everybody. That's what I'm trying to do. All right? Like, it doesn't bring me any joy to get red-faced in the morning after the Browns lose to the Pittsburgh Steelers and look bad doing it. It doesn't bring me any joy to do that. And if it's the first game of the season, like, yeah, I know. I was exasperated with Andre Schmidt, and so far he's made me look like a moron for wanting to cut the guy. And thank God for that. Thankfully to him. And maybe I've learned myself a valuable lesson. I still don't believe you develop kickers, but still, he's hitting his kicks. Good for them. Because I don't think I could stomach another issue like that. But guys, I'm not, I should say to my boss, and now I sound like Al Michaels here all of a sudden calling people out. Like, I'm not going to sit there and fake it. I don't need to. Been on the air for 14 years here in this city. I think people will understand that I'm mad when I'm mad, and I'm not going to be mad. I'm not going to fake being mad. There's nothing I hate worse than it's embarrassing. It's a joke radio when it's not. It's game one against who you're supposed to play in the Eastern Conference Finals, but it's game one of the regular season. And they're still figuring themselves out. They didn't have some players the other night. Yeah, I'm disappointed that Jared Allen made that joke because it looks bad and people are going to want to trade him over it because he's the easiest one to trade. And I'm disappointed that you had four points and four rebounds. But it's still the first game of the season.
Well, I'll admit, like,
I'm more mad at my boss than I am Jared Allen now.
I was fired up for that game until, you know, the day of, we're like, who's even playing in this game? I remember we didn't even know if Carl Anthony Towns was going to play. And I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be like a preseason game. But then when I'm watching the game, I get into it and I start, you know, analyzing it like any other game. I know a lot of fans, it's a regular season. This regular season is not going to mean all that much. So maybe that wore off on me, I'll admit.
Same boss just sent me a video of me eating and wrote nom, 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 nom. I heard him doing it in my head and now I'm laughing. I'm sorry.
And you know, Jared Allen, like, he's one of those that we've had these conversations, but we've also kind of used him as an entree into the everything else conversation with the Cavs, which is, can these guys play well in the biggest moments? And, you know, opening night does end up becoming more of a moment than game two, or I guess, you know, Milwaukee game on Sunday will feel like a big game because it's Giannis and it's their debut. And Nick Barlage was in talking about how awesome that environment is going to be. So there are only so many benchmark moments in a NBA regular season, and opening night is one of them. And so the Cavs, until further notice, not just Jared Allen, the Cavs, until further notice, as a team, has to prove that they're going to be a big moment team.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, did they fail the test in game one? So, they didn't have Darius. They didn't have Max Strus. They didn't have DeAndre Hunter. Those are three key figures.
I got 81 games left to go. So I can only do how I feel about things, guys. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of passion later on in my life about all these things, but it's not going to be over game one of the regular season. If you really want to know how it's going to play out, I could very well see myself at some point, when's the trade deadline in February? I could see myself in the month of January, if they're struggling, getting mad at Jared Allen. I could, because if they're struggling and they're getting physically dominated, going, I didn't say you guys needed to shed the soft label. You did, Jarrett. You said it. You haven't done it. I could see myself getting mad about that. The Darius Garland, if I was out on the floor, we would have won the finals. That comment, I could see myself getting upset about that. I hope I never have to, but I can use their words against them. But I'm not going to do it after game one of the season.
Well, and I think with Jared Allen,
I called him my boss's words against his own.
I'll say this. You notice I don't use a phrase anymore that a lot of people use with the Cavs over the last 3 years. And that is core four. I don't say that anymore. He is not part of their core. He's not part of everything they do now anymore. He just isn't. That's gone. He's 27 years old, not old, but his game has not evolved. Like Larry Nance Jr., you watch that guy.
You're right.
His game has evolved.
You're right.
He came in and we heard whispers like, hey, he's actually taking more threes. He's like, all right, I'll believe it when I see it in a game. And what did Larry Nance Jr. do? He came right in and was like 3-and-D. All of a sudden, a totally different player. He's transformed himself. Well, Jared Allen has it. He's been the same player now for 5 years. He's not changing. He's not evolving. So you just have to figure out how you're going to play with him.
That is correct.
He still can be a force in instances, but when you don't have your point guard out there and Darius Garland, there's not much for Jared Allen to do when he doesn't have a guy setting him up.
I understand that is some of the people's favorite things is watching me get mad, but I can't just turn it into some carnival sideshow act, and I'm not going to do it when I don't feel it. I'm a very emotional person. I'm overly happy. I'm overly sad. I'm a basket case in so many ways. If Jared Allen continues to make jokes here and there and talk about not being soft anymore and continues to put up 4 points in a basketball game.
Four rebounds.
And with four rebounds, yeah, I'll get there. Let's just hope I don't. Let's just hope I don't.
The Cavaliers back. Cavs, Knicks. It kills me a little bit, just a little bit, that Karl-Anthony Towns been downgraded, that you are missing Hart, you are missing Mitchell Robinson. Mm-hmm. Listen, we're missing Darius Garland, but at least we got Donovan going, you've got Evan Mobley going, you've got Jared going. I hate, and I know you can't do anything about injuries, but I just hate when that opening matchup, you just can't have everybody going for both teams.
I know. It almost feels like it's like the unwritten rule across the NBA that in night one, you at least got to give it your very best. At least it definitely felt like last night with the debut of NBC back in the basketball arena. It was like, all right, both those teams are playing their butt off. Both those teams are doing everything they can. And we don't have that right now. By the way, the Vegas is not really adjusted their spread at all. So maybe that's a good sign for Cat playing. Not sure.
Oh, I thought the Cavs moved to 2-point favorites.
We're 1.5.
Oh, 1.5? Yeah. Okay. Somebody tweeted that out. I don't know who, clearly, because I'd be saying their name right now. But I'm excited to have Cavs basketball back. So I wanted to, because I don't think we were kind of up against it because we had Ross at 220 today. And again, Ross, if you missed him, usually at 4 o'clock on afternoon drive. I had to move up because he's on the Chargers-Vikings call in Westwood 1 tomorrow. So at 220, we had Ross, if you missed that. I said I don't think of it as like a lack of buzz with the Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. I see it as like a lack of drama. Because we don't have to worry about Donovan, right? I think they were pretty clear they weren't trading Darius or Jared Allen this offseason, despite the injuries and the maybe falling short in the Indiana series. I look at it as just a lack of drama from the Cleveland side of things as opposed to a lack of buzz. And I also look at it as just total trust in what the Cavs have done, because I think you know they're going to deliver in the regular season.
Well,
at the very least.
But I also think there's some hesitancy from the fans with the idea that if it doesn't work out this year, you really kind of have to wonder if it's ever going to work out. I mean, you're a 64-win team last year. At some point, you're going to break through is the predominant thought. At least it should be when you have a 64-win team. 64-win teams typically do at some point break through, and then it just becomes obvious.
It's funny. Like, listen, this is a very tough thing to gauge here because we all have our little circle of friends and we have our circle of people we know. I haven't heard one person even worry about that. All I've heard
about
is
not breaking through.
All I've heard is because that's a April and May thought. I think all I've heard from any Cavs fan in my life is I'm just so excited they're back and I can't wait for the good vibes to roll on because I trust that to happen. Whereas the Browns piss me off every Sunday.
Well, the Browns do piss you off every Sunday. That's fair. That is a guarantee. It's funny. I was talking to my brother-in-law about this because he's a massive basketball fan in general. And I was like, yeah, we're not really doing much in the discussion department because I think it's more the idea that there's not many things to really complain about. Mm-hmm. We know what the team is. It's not like if Atkinson has this team as a 52-win team this year and they get bounced out in the second round of the playoffs again, people are like, well, Atkinson sucks and deserves to be fired. That's not really going to be the case. And we'll have some real conversations about what happens with Donovan and these guys moving forward. But I think at this point, people just want to soak it in and take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, I think sometimes so the Cavs are awesome to just be a fan of. But from the sports talk side of things, there's not a lot of there. You know what I mean? Like, what's your biggest regular season question? Well, how do you handle Darius's absence? And what do you think about Lonzo Ball? Those are real questions, but there's not like a sizzle to those things. It's the NBA has been built on rivalries and drama. And right now, I don't really see a clear threat in the East. It doesn't mean they're not there, but I don't see a clear threat in the East that the average Cavs fan would register.
I see way more threats in the West. I think there might be three teams better than the Cavs in the West, but we don't play in the West.
And I kind of look at Lonzo Ball and I'm like, well, I'm not so worried about whether he plays 40 games or 60 games this year. I'm worried if he's going to be healthy for the playoffs because I think that's where his impact will truly be felt.
Well, and the differences are going to be in the margins in many ways. And it's going to be, does Evan Mobley continue trying to shoot more three-pointers? Does Donovan have another place that his game can get to? Do we hand off the idea that Mobley is now going to be better than Donovan? Does that happen at some point this season? Like, there's a lot of little things that could happen, and it won't happen in the blink of an eye. It'll happen over a 3-4-5 month really adventure.
Well, that's what's interesting about then this piece of sound, LeBron James. And it has just been a wild week for LeBron.
Well, LeBron, he's not even reacting on the bench. Apparently, that's a big problem
for
a lot of people.
We had the game last night. Apparently,
eating pizza with a fork.
Eating pizza with a fork. There was the Westbrook stuff from the Jovan Buha book that came out. I said Buha weird because I was trying to pass air through me and not burp into the microphone. Jovan Buha book.
A ghost that decided to laugh.
I was actually, it was the name of the bad guy from Ghostbusters 2, which I was also confusing it with. But the book where Russell Westbrook just thought he was a total fake ass clown. You have all these things going on. Well,
does that mean Mac is now scared of LeBron?
All right, Mac. LeBron comes up and says, you can do a 60-minute live interview on your TikTok.
The Decision 2.0, but not the alcohol ad this time.
But I have to have clown face paint like and a red nose
remember
on.
Remember, he dressed up as It one year for Halloween.
Yep.
He dressed up in the It costume.
But it's
brings
on
that
Halloween
back.
And them going to a Halloween party. And so I'm going to be looking like a clown. Would you do it?
I think I would have to bite the bullet and do it.
I don't think you're that afraid of clowns, man. All right.
That was not I'm afraid of clowns answer.
Clownatoots would be something you'd be into, or at the very least could get over. And now LeBron, a good, you know, life changing interview, you could sit there and grin and bear it with LeBron as it. I think you've got your answer. I think I don't think you're really that afraid of clowns. I think you just are kind of, you're just kind of mid on clowns.
I don't really know how to respond to that. I'm not a fan of clowns. That's how I've always said it. That's how I've always been, dude.
It sounds more like you're like clown Switzerland.
When you guys did your lunch yesterday together, did any part of you think that a clownitude was coming along with Nick?
No, not at all.
Not even like in the slightest bit in the back of your mind. I'm like, oh, he wouldn't, but maybe
zero
he would.
Chance. Yeah. Zero chance.
But maybe he would.
Well, see, now I wish it would have. Now I wish it would have explained to Vanessa why that specific thing's going to show up with the credit card. It's like, no, it's not for me. It's for Mac. We're conquering his fears and his loneliness in one swipe of the card.
I like that you're paying for it with a credit card.
Yeah. Wow.
You think the clownitude's got like Apple Pay or something?
I gotta put it on the books. I'm an honest man.
You want the tax write off associated
yes.
with that?
That's a business expense.
It's a show bit.
Yeah, getting our board op, getting him free of the fear of clowns, while also getting him a little amorous affection. Yeah, that's a business expense.
Hey, so what did LeBron say?
So LeBron was on the Mind the Game pod. That's a good transition. Mind the Game pod and talked about which team in the NBA has the most pressure on them heading into this season.
You think about like, you know, Milwaukee now where they can play with Giannis and Miles now.
That's right.
You think about Cleveland, you know, with Allen and Mobley. They have to be able to, you know, compliment one another. Yeah. So
that one's under a little pressure this year, I think.
Oh,
yeah,
that whole
thing. Yeah, they're going to be great. Yeah. They're going
to
be great.
I think they're under the most pressure of any team coming into the season.
So it's interesting. I initially with LeBron go, is there another agenda there with LeBron, or is this a straight up thing that he thinks? As somebody who's been wildly complimentary of these Cavaliers, I couldn't find the obvious agenda that it'd be like, oh, he's playing games.
Well, I think the idea is that you prop them up, so then when they fail, then you seem better in hindsight with everything. Like if there was an avenue and a back channel that LeBron had maybe tried to get to Cleveland and the door had been shut on that, and they're like, no, we got a good thing going, we don't really need you, then you would make these type of comments. I'm not saying that's how it went down, but like if I'm trying to find the agenda attached to it all, that would be one way.
I just look at this and I go, I tend to believe that we overrate pressure on like a big scale across like a whole season. I think we overrate and maybe sometimes conflate what that really means. I think the Cavs will have pressure on them if they struggle with health and injuries in the regular season. That's the only time I think they'll feel pressure. When it comes to the playoffs, I think you've proven you can win in the playoffs. I think the pressure grows with each round. But I don't think it's anything like now. Like I think it's 6 months from now, and again, I think it only happens that once you get into the second round to see if you can get over that hump.
Well, I mean, the hourglass is ticking, though, and I think they know that, especially if you're someone like Donovan. Like, this might be the last year that Donovan could win an NBA title, and people say it's Donovan Mitchell's title. I don't know how much he cares about that. I think he just wants to win a title, but people in the NBA do care. Ask Kevin Durant. People care about who gets the designation for whose title it is. And even within that, like we're 2 years away, as Jason Voight has written a million times, about drastic changes on this team having to happen because you spend more money than anybody else in the NBA.
But
do you feel like
the players individually feel that pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a pressure on this team to perform and to perform at a high level. I really do think that, only because they haven't in the past.
But I think the pressure is we've got to probably win 50 games, right? And then we got to be a top six seed. I think that's the pressure for teams in their.
Well, but I think like winning 50 games and being a top six seed and losing in the second round again, I think that's an absolute failure for this team.
If you're Donovan, why would you give a rip about the tax bill that Dan's got to pay in 2 more years?
You're not cared about the tax bill, but you are cared about how you're perceived. He's talked about it openly so many times about his perception across the NBA.
Isn't that every NBA player and every NBA star that doesn't have a title yet?
He's never made a conference finals. And so, like, I think there is something to the idea that Donovan, he understands you only have so many years in the NBA, and he's got to make it count. And this is one of the few times where this is his team.
But I don't think he carries it from day to day. I don't think he sits out there in practice and he's going to the lane and he's thinking, and do people think I'm an MVP? Like, I don't think that's the way the guys carry this stuff around. I think it's like any job.
I mean, I do think it varies from player to player. I think Kobe carried that stuff around him all the time. I think it's been well documented how he carried that stuff around with him. I don't know that Donovan is that guy, though. I don't know that Donovan carries it like that.
I always thought the Kobe stuff was a little performative. I always thought the Michael stuff was performative. Like, I'd I'll say it because LeBron's my favorite player. I think the LeBron stuff, it's performative. I think it's a good narrative to be like, mama mentality, right? It's like, no, you just work really, really hard. All right? You didn't have to be a D. You would have been a really great player. You're just using some personality defect as a way to sell. Like, these guys are great at marketing. And I buy that, but like, I don't know. In terms of the pressure, I don't think hardly anybody in the NBA is feeling pressure going into the season unless you have something to prove in the regular season, which the Cavs don't. I think there's 100 billion things that impacts the idea of pressure. I think it's way overstated. I don't think the Cavs have more pressure than anybody. The Knicks have pressure. They just fired their head coach who built them out of the abyss. And, oh, by the way, that pressure doesn't start until April either.
I was thinking the Knicks have pressure. I was thinking the 76ers have a bunch of pressure. I was thinking even a team like Denver, I think, has pressure on themselves. I mean, like, there's a lot of teams that I think have pressure.
Well, but it's every team has a certain amount of pressure anyway.
The idea here is that the Cavs have to do something that we have not seen this core yet do. And they have to prove to the rest of the NBA that the too big and too undersized guard thing can actually work. And so, like, call it whatever you want, but like they're under the gun this year.
Average NBA players make $20 million a year. It's not just about the money, but like they have so much to fall back on now that you just didn't really at this level 30 years ago. I just think pressure's changed. I think people are also smart enough to understand some of the pressure that's out there is manufactured by social media and the media, and you can just avoid it.
Well, but I think that's part of the fun of the NBA in many ways. I love I know you're not the biggest ring culture guy. I love the ring culture around the NBA because it just, even though they don't do the regular season that hard, it does feel like these players care about how their legacy is perceived in a way that I think it's just awesome to dive into. Like in the NBA, you do top 10 rankings. Like I saw people argue emphatically about if Jokic wins a title this year and wins his fourth league MVP, if he cracks the top 10, and then who that kicks out of the top 10. It was an hour-long debate. Like, I love that side of the NBA.
216-474-0092. LeBron says the Cavs have the most pressure on them in the NBA heading into the season. Do you agree or disagree with that? Austin Carr will tell us, Mr. Cavalier himself, if he agrees or disagrees in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Couple things. Obviously, the big story in the NBA, the gambling probe, and there are like two stories that go to that. If anything else happens, we will get you up to speed on that. Obviously, it was the big news of the morning. And again, listen to our 2020 updates, and they'll tell you what's going on with that. We're just now just kind of getting into the Cavaliers game last night, where they lost 119-111. Cavaliers, you know, they came back. They were down 15. You were like, wow, they're back in this thing. And then you got, you know, you're riding the wave, and then when it's all said and done, you're like, ah, I wish they would have won, but they didn't. 119-111 again, the final in this thing. And there were just things that were a little bit annoying to me, I think, especially late in the game, that it was just so, yeah, they had open looks. I get it, but I still think they could have moved the ball around a little bit more, especially in that fourth quarter. Donovan Mitchell, 31 points last night. Evan Mobley, 22. Sam Merrill with 19. Nance and Wade also in double figures for last night's game. Jeff, so again, the big picture, what did we learn last night from last night?
Oh, I can throw out some big generalizations. You want me to?
Yeah,
go for it. Because it was one game and your guys were injured, numerous guys. So I don't think you can get too specific. I'll give you some generalizations. I don't like hero ball, and I don't think it works. So even though Donovan got you back into the game, you lost the game. Because I agree with you, Andy. In the second half, I don't think you moved the ball very well. And you lost your offense, and it was a little not smooth. How's that? Yeah. Evan Mobley, Tim Legler, and Richard Jefferson, in the first half when he was doing what he was doing, they were drooling over his game. I know Mark in Cleveland has been on us since for 2 years. You know, well, he touches the ball all the time. He needs to shoot more. You don't just jack up shots. And we all know what happens when guys just start jacking up shots. It's usually not good.
Right.
Because you're not doing it in the flow of the offense. What did Kenny Atkinson do so well last year? He put in an offense. It was beautiful. The ball moved. They shared the ball. Donovan Mitchell rarely took as many shots as he took last night. He took 25 shots. Well, Darius was out. Max Strus is out. DeAndre Hunter's out. Felt the need to get back in the game. That's what they did. I don't think that recipe works regularly.
Sure.
So that I just want to see him move the ball more, and I want to see Evan. If he can take 18 shots a game, that's great. That's perfect. But, boy, I think you could have used him in the second half, and he only got 5 shots. Some of it on him, some of it on the coaching, some of it on his teammates. I like Max Strus shooting the basketball. Excuse me, Sam Merrill shooting the basketball. 5 of 10 on threes. I won't call it a Kyle Korver release, but he's got a pretty quick release on that three. Kyle Korver has the quickest release I think I've ever seen in my life. But Sam gets it and shoots it. And I like it. And I hope he gets some significant minutes this year.
Let's go Cool Ray in Bedford. Hi, Cool Ray.
Hi, Cool Ray. Bye, Cool Ray.
Cool Ray, we gave it our best effort. All right, I'll put you on hold. I'm in a good mood today.
There's Isaac back in Shaker.
All right, let's give Isaac another shot. Isaac, you back?
All right, it's on our end.
Is it me? Dan, you try to pick it up. Go for it.
Hung up on poor Isaac again.
Go. Let's go Chuck in Cleveland, line 5.
Hello, Chuck.
Chuck, you there?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Phonageddon.
Interesting. Seems weird. It's not me. Oh, look who's on it. All right, we got to get a technician on it.
Call the engineering staff. Here we go. What kind of a challenge do you think it's going to be for this team this year? Because last year, they were the nice little team that everybody loved because they got hot. They had a new coach who came in with the whole Steve Kerr aura from Golden State. And you win 15 straight, and you're kicking butt all year long. Do you think people are going to be teams around the NBA, A, gearing up for them? Fans,
yes.
B, expectations through the roof?
Yes, I think they've got the bullseye on them right now. I think that everyone around the league is saying, A, I think the East is wide open. We think the Cavs are a pretty good regular season team. We probably played them pretty tough last year, but the Cavaliers pulled away in the end. You know, they were healthy last year. They got us. I just think a lot of teams from around the NBA are looking and saying, you know, they got us at the right time. We weren't healthy when they got us last year, and that's why they were so successful. And now you put it in a situation where all these teams are now gunning for the Cavaliers, and they're going to get everybody's best. Mm-hmm. I think that teams, especially the games that are now on national TV, I mean, they're all over the place between, I don't know, the 5 different networks you can pick them up on. What, ABC, ESPN, Peacock, NBC, who else am I sure forgetting one other one?
The Bonanza Channel.
Sure, the Bonanza Channel, yeah.
You know one other thing I really liked last night?
Channel Zero.
Yeah. I like this a lot. We'll see how it progresses. Larry Nance Jr. played only 17 minutes.
Yeah.
That's not what I liked. In 17 minutes, Larry had 10.6 rebounds and an assist. Larry's the kind of player. Hey, what do we need tonight? We need some points. Okay, I can give you some points. You need more D? I can give you D.
And hustle. Like, I thought he gave them hustle last
time. He always does.
Yeah.
I think Larry is the type of guy that you want in your rotation. You want him in your rotation. And that's why he's going to get some minutes. He should. I think he's a real, real knowledgeable NBA player.
There are things about last night that I liked. Obviously, I love the comeback. And, it's weird because you're talking about playing Euro ball, but you're watching and you're hooked in the third quarter. You're like, man, I want to see Mitchell touch the ball again. Is he going to miss? Is he going to miss? Is he going to miss? And all of a sudden, you know, it took till the very end of the quarter until he started to miss. How good are the Knicks? That was what I was also trying to figure out, knowing that they're also missing players last night. I mean, how good are the Knicks?
I think they can be better under Mike Brown. Keyword is can be. I don't necessarily. I thought they did a great job under Tom Thibodeau. I thought Thibodeau was a good coach. I think Tibbs is a better coach than Mike, at least the Mike that we've seen in the past in New York. Perhaps he's able to take stuff that he picked up at Golden State, good stuff that he picked up in Sacramento when he never should have been let go. That was silly. Mike shouldn't have been let go in Sacramento. And can bring it to New York on a big stage, and he's been on a big stage before. He's former coach of the Lakers.
Sure.
Had LeBron here.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big stage. And make it work in New York. Their goal is pretty simple, Andy. Wait, Boston? It's the same as the Cavs.
Yeah.
Boston's not here? Oh, good. No Indy? Good. We're going to the NBA Finals. That's the thought.
It's fair. It's fair. I just... That was my big thing. I was like trying to figure out, okay, I know the Cavaliers are shorthanded, and I know they can be a better team than we saw last night, but what am I watching for when I'm, you know, what's Jalen Brunson going to do? Was at least Salters was doing sidelines last night.
And boy, they have nice lighting on their sideline camera last night.
Is that what you noticed?
Yeah, not just Lisa, but the players. I thought, boy, that's a good-looking camera shot.
Like, she asked him a question about, like, the excitement of New York and the locker room and stuff like that, and I was like, you know, Tibbs is gone now. Mike Brown's there. They looked at 1,000 different coaches, and she made the locker room sound like there was all this great energy in it. Like, they were so... And I was just kind of like...
Maybe there was.
I don't know. I don't know what... little things become big things in New York, obviously.
As I said, I think Tom Thibodeau's a good coach. And that said, does Tom look like the kind of guy who would bring joy to the locker room?
No.
Exactly.
No.
Will Mike? I don't know. Maybe. And we'll see. But I think Mike has become a better coach. And I think he got a really raw deal when he got let go in Sacramento. And we'll see if he's able to pick up from where he left off in Sacramento and move on from there and see what we get.
Huh. All right, let's try the phones again. Daryl's in Solon. Hi, Daryl. How are you?
Loving every minute of it. That's how he is.
All right. We gave it our best effort. So you got one game down. I don't know. It's not the end of the world.
No, that's because it's one game.
Yeah. I know. You wish that, you know, you want them to come out and win the first game of the season, especially when it's at New York. It's on national TV. You're like, okay, they can, you know, let's make a little bit of a statement, but then you're trying to weigh it out. And then the other part is does it really matter? That's the hard part. Like last year, we were so excited about the way they were getting on these streaks and the regular season was awesome. And this is, you know, oh, look at this coach of the year. Guy comes right in here. Boom. He turns the whole, you know, everything's moving in the right direction. Then you get to the playoffs. The other thing that I think that you look at when they play the Knicks is how hard are they going to play? Are we going to be talking about big guys down low? Are we going to be questioning how tough the Cavaliers are in these games? I think that's the other point, especially when you're playing the Knicks for what happened 2 years ago. Should we be concerned about that? Should we worry about that? Should we expect more out of Jared Allen?
Well, get him the ball. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
See, that's people, I think casual basketball fans, and I honestly think most people are casual basketball fans, most, look at a box score, watch a game, and think, well, he didn't do anything. Jared Allen's job is not to score 25 points a game. Jared's job is to go out and play really good defense, keep the ball moving, and score when you get the opportunity to score. That's part of his job. And you can be a really good basketball player and not score 25 points a game, you know? But if you're a team and you have guys like Jared who have overall skills, it's up to you. It's up to the guards to get guys like that involved because they don't handle the ball. They can't pass it to themselves. That's where we've gone back to two guards, Andy, where you have, you know, Darius and Donovan.
Right.
And, okay, they have the ball. It's up to them if they want to share it or not, right?
Yeah.
Last night in the third, Donovan didn't share it very much. And guess what? He got it back into the game.
He did.
So though we'd like to see him share the ball, what he did worked. So just keep in mind, the end result, it's a team type of deal, and you want guys to play their roles effectively. And this team did a really good job of that last year, and I hope they do it again.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this. Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.